afternoons on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. It's Friday, February 21st, 2025. Tonight on WNUR News, a library exchange, geeks and classics of the history department, the new Villa Line, and the outfits that might go with it, Beowulf's Thousand Years of Baggage, the rise of the iPad kid, and this week's Fairlighter Friends. Their stories and more, tonight on WNUR News at 6. Thanks for swinging by. It's almost the middle of winter quarter, and college students, your local library might be the place to make a new friend. Residents filled the Evanston Library Community Room on Tuesday night to exchange cookbooks and puzzles. Mariah Petway has more.
With one click of a button, students either get their dream schedule or backup classes. Pre-registration lets declared majors pick classes early, but regular registration can be a battle if you're assigned a later time. Enrollment has usually gone well for junior Alexandra Marin.
I really only think there was one quarter where I had that 4 p.m. slot and I couldn't get into a class that I really wanted.
Pre-registration and regular registration started with seniors on Monday and end with freshmen on Thursday. Students should check the portal for their times, which run from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Regular registration starts Monday, February 24th. For WNUR News, I'm Mariah Petway.
Class registration can be stressful, so Northwestern's History Department is trying to make the process a little sweeter.
Do you prefer chocolate or vanilla cake? Well, what about a slice of the Dutch tulip crisis versus Victorian-era goblins? Those were two of the frosting images at the Cakes and Classes event, where students got a taste for the spring history courses.
So we know that people sometimes need, like, a little extra to get them to come to the history department.
That was Professor Scott Sowerby, who rolled back the cuffs of his frock coat before cutting into the Pirates, Guns, and Empires cake with a sword. He and several others at the event say the class registration system, CSER, is frustrating. At the cake event, though, students avoided the headache of navigating the online course catalog, even if in exchange for a toothache. Georgia Kerrigan, WNUR News.
On Monday, Mayfest announced the theme for this year's Dillo Day in a new and exciting way. Jessica Watts reports.
After dropping subtle hints on Instagram, Mayfest made it official on Monday. This year's theme is Carnival Dillo. Now in its 53rd year, Dillo's the largest student-run music festival in the country. Last year, students sported hiking boots, pigtails, and merit badge sashes at Camp Dillo. This year's concert is 3 months away, but students are already planning what they'll wear. School of Communication third year Kate Horton is going as a piece of cotton candy. While she says carnival can be cute,
the outfit's not so much. If I see one person in cutoff jeans or a tank top, I'm going to lose my marbles.
The carnival's coming to the Lakeville week 7 of spring quarter on Saturday, May 17th. Brandon Kondritz, WNUR News.
That was Brandon Kondritz with the scoop on this year's Dillo Day costumes. This is Jessica Watts on Mayfest announcing the theme for this year's Dillo Day in a new and exciting way.
What do Bunraku puppets, punk rock, and Old English epic poetry have in common? This might give you a hint.
Beowulf.
The man.
The character.
The hero. The classic story poem tale.
Those characters are referring, of course, to Beowulf, the epic Old English story poem that lends its characters and story to a new production of the musical Beowulf, A Thousand Years of Baggage, which is being performed in the Lewis Room this week. School of Comm sophomore Reagan Alleman is the stage manager for the show. She said that working on the show has been an exercise in adaptation.
I love adaptational work. It's one of my favorites and the thing I'm drawn to the most. So getting to be a part of the process and like adapting this poem that's so old in like a way that is completely unexpected and getting to share that with people is super exciting.
The production Alamon is working on is composed by Dave Malloy and written by David Craig. School of Comm senior Ethan Karras is directing the production. The music for the show is influenced by music traditions in punk and rock, as well as klezmer and even choral music. Karras says that his iteration of the production is inspired by the punk and rock aesthetics of the music, but also by the content of the story.
Punk aesthetic was one that struck out to us both because of the sound of the music, but also because punk, beyond just like the physical aesthetic of what you might think punk looks like if you think about punk, it's also to me, as like a fan of it as an art form, is such a DIY aesthetic as well. It is very people powered. Like the worst thing you can do is sort of be a poser and sort of just adopt it as an affectation. So I think for this show, that's so much about performance, both of masculinity and of heroism, and how those narratives that we kind of take for granted now started somewhere and were passed down, that the genre or style of punk is like a really cool medium to explore that in.
But what do we know? What do we know about Beowulf?
He is a warrior.
Yes, but what kind of warrior is he?
The main character of Beowulf is an ancient Scandinavian warrior. Over the course of the poem, he faces and fights three main foes: a monster called Grendel, Grendel's mother, and a dragon. In this production, all three have a material through line.
There are various versions of puppets for all three of the monsters that Beowulf faces, and each one of them is just an extraordinary piece of craftsmanship and artistry from Liam and from the actors who are puppeteering him. So,
School of Calm Jr. Liam Janinga spent hours working on each puppet. He created two Bunraku puppets to represent Grendel's mother and Beowulf. Bunraku is a form of traditional Japanese puppetry.
So Bunrakus take three puppeteers, one person on the head and the left arm, and then one person on the right arm and the hips, and then one person on the feet. And so there's a lot of coordination that goes into that, as well as like breath work and just three people moving one body and making that one body seem like it is it truly one body. It takes a lot. So the first day I brought them in to work with the puppeteers, with the actors, it was such a magical moment when they finally got it, and they just, I lost the puppeteers and I just saw the puppet swimming through water.
Janinga said that the puppets, which include Grendel's arm and hand, as well as the two Bunraku puppets, add to the fantastical atmosphere of the production.
The other thing about Beowulf, right, is because it is this epic, this myth, this magical myth, is puppets are able to bring that magic to life, I think. When a puppet walks into a room, it brings a whole world with it. The audience sees a puppet and they're ready to believe anything. And when that happens, that's like true real world magic.
The oldest known manuscript of Beowulf dates back to the 11th century, but some scholars believe its true origins to be an oral history, making it possibly centuries older. Alleman and Karas both referenced Beowulf's ancient history and continued relevance as part of what they want audiences to take away from the show.
When I watched the show all the way through, the thing that I was come away with at the end is just, like, the power of story as a means of, like, connecting people and passing down these, like, ideals and morals, and then, like, thinking about whether we agree or disagree with the things that are being passed down through story. I think that that's something that this show, like, sparks a conversation about in a really fun way, that's unexpected, but it does make you think a little bit about, like, what are the kind of stories that we're telling, and why do we tell up the stories? Because the things that survive for this long hold meaning and they hold power in the words that are being shared.
It's the oldest thing that we have in our language that we speak now. So in a lot of ways, it is the sort of the bedrock of which we all, by speaking this language, owe some sort of debt to. And language, like anything else, is a tool. So it's somewhat neutral in and of itself. So I hope that this gives people greater appreciation and awareness of how that tool can be used.
Beowulf, A Thousand Years of Baggage, will be in the Lewis Room today and tomorrow at 6:30 and 9:30 p.m. For WNUR News, I'm Mika Ellison.
That was me, Mika Ellison, with a story on Beowulf, A Thousand Years of Baggage. Up next, we have Jessica Watts on Mayfest announcing the theme for this year's Dillo Day in a new and exciting way.
Dillo Day is one of the most highly anticipated days of the year for Northwestern students. This year, Mayfest partnered with the Northwestern Dining Halls to announce this year's theme, Carnival Dillo. The warm, sugary smell of Plex Dining Hall and the unusual addition of Italian ice got students excited for the annual event. Junior Max Milo is one of them.
I think Carnival could be a really fun theme if they come out with a large Ferris wheel, a lot of string lights, popcorn, maybe some clowns. I usually have a very eventful time at Dillo.
The performers for Dillo will be announced over the next few months. For now, students can work on planning their carnival-inspired outfits. For WNUR News, I'm Jessica Watts.
The newest educational apps and mobile games are increasingly luring kids to their electronic devices. New methods of screen time restrictions are being discussed. Alice O has the story.
The rise of iPad kids is upon us. Many of us in the older half of Gen Z remember the novelty of technology in our childhood clearly. We twiddled our thumbs waiting for computer lab. We spent playdates doing what is now considered touching grass. But today's kids? They're accustomed to getting their school-funded Chromebooks and bonding over Roblox's party chat. With the perpetual evolution of technology and media, it's a never-ending balancing act of making the most of new tech while not letting it control kids' lives. Xuan Park is studying biochemistry and psychology in his first year at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He said his parents are combating the issue of media addiction by assigning his 9-year-old sister a strict screen time limit. On Saturdays, she gets a total of 3 hours of game time, but with a 15-minute break between each hour. But Park knows from his own childhood how easy it is to bypass screen time restrictions.
A lot of the education has shifted from like paper pencil to digitalized forms. Obviously, I think COVID had a big influence on them needing electronics. Their usage has grown a lot. And I think when I was their age, I was grinding out math workbooks, but now they're kind of just playing math games. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they can actually be constituted as education on the app from what I've seen.
Think one sibling is annoying enough? McCormick and Beanan freshman Hannah Webb has 4 siblings, 2 of which are 8 and 10 years old. With the age-old trend of parents loosening their holds on later-born children, Webb said there's been a noticeable difference in control of technology by her parents.
Yeah, I would say that they actually have a lot more freedom on their devices than we did growing up. They kind of can do whatever they want. Yeah, I would say my brother consumes a lot of content. Definitely. Just kind of unregulated. We don't really know what he's up to sometimes.
Calvin McKean is an 11-year-old fifth grader from Indianapolis. On his home iPad, he often plays Roblox or Minecraft with friends from school. But what sets him apart from other kids his age? He's aware of screen time's dangerous effects and makes sure he's staying safe and responsible whenever he's online.
It's very time-consuming, I find myself just being not wanting to do regular tasks. It can be kind of addicting. And I don't even really realize it. Every single year I've been in school, we've had multiple times people coming to us telling us how to not give any information away. People ask for this information, people talk about this, don't get involved, stuff like that.
Despite such dangers, Webb said the increase of media consumption doesn't necessarily have to be the 8th deadly sin. Rather, it serves as a bonding opportunity for her siblings and their friends.
When they hang out with their friends, they go out and have a play date, they'll play Minecraft together or something.
Yeah.
Or do some sort of or play Roblox together. Mm-hmm. Or do some sort of activity around the screen with each other. And I guess when I saw that, I realized that they weren't the only ones who were on their device that much.
Weinberg sophomore Joyce Huang, sister to a 10-year-old younger brother, tells her parents to monitor the content her brother watches. But she said that in the end, both parents and media companies have a level of ethical responsibility in ensuring children are exposed to age-appropriate content.
So, since when did parents become a secondary parent as opposed to the internet in that mm-hmm. sense? I think parents need to come back and take a stronger role in the way that they parent and the way that they're raising the next generation of kids. While I do think some companies do have some they should consider warnings and things, and I know a lot of different apps and companies have age limitations, but I feel those can be pretty easily circumvented.
As screen time grows, so does the challenge of keeping it under control. Kids might need new methods to better regulate their time on the screen. For WNUR News, I'm Alice O.
If last week has you feeling like you can't take winter anymore, there's a bright side. Cold weather benefits your mind and body, even if it doesn't feel it. Juliet Allen has the weather.
Hi, I'm Juliet. Welcome back to Fairweather Friends. Each week, we give you a peek into the local and national weather. Shout out to my dad in Texas for warning me about how cold I was going to be on Tuesday. From Evanston, Illinois, this is Fairweather Friends.
Here's the weather.
Last week, an Arctic blast swept across the nation. It left Chicago battling below-zero wind chills, ice, and snow. Yesterday, things finally started warming up. Today and tomorrow, we're seeing the tail end of this particularly wicked weather system. Saturday will even give us a little bit of sun, but a 13-degree wind chill will keep us humble. On Sunday, temps will be a whopping high of 36 degrees. Cloud cover will be about 50%, giving us precious time in the sunshine. Things will keep warming up through the start of the week with highs in the low 40s. As temps climb, though, clouds will start rolling in. Monday and Tuesday will have a 70 to 80% cloud cover. And while Wednesday will be the warmest day of the week, there's a chance of rain in the afternoon. Why can't we ever have nice things? Then, temps will start to drop again. We may even see some snow on Thursday. But try not to despair too much. I know it's hard in such miserable weather, so I'm here to offer a silver lining. Trust that it's just as much for me as it is for you. It may seem like it, but harsh winters aren't only about seasonal depression. Living in cold climates can actually have a bunch of benefits. Here are three pretty neat ones. First, colder air is good for your brain. Studies show that cold air boosts brain functions and quicker decision-making. That'll come in handy when you're trying to figure out if you should try and cross Sheridan with 4 seconds left on the crosswalk. The next big one is sleep. When we're falling asleep, our body temperature drops. This process can take up to 2 hours in the summer, but it's way faster in the winter. Finally, I'll leave you with a really niche one. Cold temperatures activate our brown fat cells. That's a special type of fat in our bodies used to produce heat. When this happens, excess glucose in our blood is absorbed. This means that repeated exposure to cold temperatures leads to improved insulin sensitivity. I hope that gave you a few reasons to keep trucking this winter. And now I have a few good things to tell tour groups when they ask me about the weather. That's all for this week's edition of Fairweather Friends. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, free yourself from the shackles of your black parka. In Evanston, Illinois, I'm Juliet Allen, WNUR News.
Taking a look into the headlines, a recent review by Northwestern School of Medicine investigators found that a single session interventions for mental health can significantly improve mental health outcomes for youth and adults. The study found that across 415 clinical trials, 83% reported positive outcomes. Infectious disease experts at Northwestern also say that the bird flu poses little risk to humans, though the disease could become more dangerous if it mutates, allowing for human-to-human transmission. NU experts say vaccines are key to preventing the spread. In Illinois, the deadline for getting your Real ID approaches, for real this time. The Real ID Act was passed in 2005, and since then the deadline for obtaining one has continuously been pushed back. However, officials say that the TSA has rejected the option for a further postponement, setting the real, actual deadline at May 7th of this year. The Department of Education has given schools and universities 2 weeks to eliminate, quote, racial preferences in hiring, admissions, and other areas. If schools do not comply, the department is threatening to pull all federal funding. However, according to USA Today, legal experts are already raising doubts about the department's authority and ability to enforce that promise. In Egypt, archaeologists report finding the tomb of Thutmose II near the Valley of Kings. This would make it the first pharaoh's tomb discovered in the area since King Tutankhamun's tomb was excavated over a century ago. This tomb was built by the surviving wife of Thutmose II, Hatshepsut, who would become an important ruler in ancient Egypt in her own right after his death. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter,